You can open your Bibles with me to the book of Judges, chapter 2. The book of Judges, chapter 2. Judges, chapter 2. For those of you that are newer to the Liberty Fellowship services, I want to make a little preface to my message today. First of all, I'm preaching today with a little burr on my seat. My wife has always told me that I preach my best sermons when I have a burr on my seat. But I don't know if that's true. I know I probably run more people away when I have a burr on my seat. But I do. And you that are newer to Liberty Fellowship, I can say this almost without question or hesitation. You have never heard a message from a pulpit like you are going to hear today. And the reason for that is you are in a fellowship that is not registered with the Internal Revenue Service as a 501c3 nonprofit organization. The churches across America, for the most part, all denominations, are under the authority, auspices, and control of the Internal Revenue Service via their acceptance of the 501c3 nonprofit organization status. They are told things that they can say, things that they cannot say, things that they can do, things that they cannot do by the federal government. The federal government cannot tell us to do or say or not do or not say anything. We say whatever we feel God wants us to say, and that's the reason why we will never be a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We will not surrender that freedom to speak the truth to any power that be, including the IRS. So this message is going to be something like you've never heard, and I'm going to touch on issues that are very unpopular, even among so-called conservative Christians. I may even touch on issues today that are unpopular among some of you. One thing you have to know about me, and this is one of the biggest misunderstandings about Chuck Baldwin that's out there. When you talk to people that do not know me, that have never heard me in person, but they only hear the rumors, you will hear them say something like, "Oh yeah, Chuck Baldwin, he's that political preacher." How many have heard that? Yeah. You that come here regularly know, or that watch regularly, know I'm probably the most apolitical preacher you will ever, ever meet. By a political preacher, it means somebody who's going to come out for or against a particular partisanship, a particular party. If you are a liberal congregation with a liberal pastor, they will, from the pulpit for the most part, support the Democrat Party and Democrat politicians. If you are a conservative congregation, for the most part, the congregation will support Republican politicians and the pulpit, Republican presidents, etc. You're looking at a guy who couldn't care less whether the politician is a Republican or a Democrat. I couldn't care less if he claims to be a conservative or a liberal. I am not partisan in any shape, manner, or form. I am an equal opportunity declarer of truth. And if truth in its negative form offends a Republican or a Democrat, I couldn't care less. If it offends a conservative or a liberal, I couldn't care less. Truth is truth. And I do not take exception to any political party or any candidate or any president. You know, for most, if you're a conservative and then a Republican gets elected president, oh, it's hands off. We don't talk about him negatively. If you're a Democrat, same thing for the Democrat president. That's not me. I truly am apolitical as it can get. I really believe that one of the reasons why America is in such trouble is because our Christian folks, including our pastor, have become too political. They take sides. And they refuse to deal with the truth and stick with the truth and then apply the truth, and whoever is affected, let the chips fall where they may. God has not called me to please the Republican Party, to please the Democrat Party, to please Barack Obama, to please John Tester, to please Steve Daines, or Donald Trump. God has called me to please Him. Yeah. Period. When Barack Obama was president, I had plenty to say about his shenanigans. And now that Donald Trump is president, don't expect me to stop dealing with the shenanigans coming out of his White House. All of that was absolutely an introduction. So if you feel like leaving now, you will save yourself several hours, potentially, of grief as you get angrier and angrier the further I go into the sermon. I'll wait a minute while you make up your mind. Okay, you're still here, so you're asking for it. Let's start with the book of Judges and get the spiritual context. And an angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Bochim and said, I made you to go up out of Egypt, and I brought you into the land which I swear unto your fathers, and I said, I will never break my covenant with you. And ye shall make no league with the inhabitants of this land. Ye shall throw down their altars, but ye have not obeyed my voice. Why have you done this? Wherefore I also said, I will not drive them out from before you, but they shall be as thorns in your sides, and their gods shall be a snare unto you. And it came to pass, when the angel of the Lord spake these words unto the children of Israel, unto all the children of Israel, that the people lifted up their voice and wept. And they called the name of that place Bochim, and they sacrificed there unto the Lord. And when Joshua had let the people go, the children of Israel went up to every man his inheritance to possess the land. And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders that outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord that he did for Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died, being 110 years old. And they buried him in the border of his inheritance in Timnath-Heres, in the mount of Ephraim, in the north side of Gash. And also all that generation were gathered unto their fathers. And there arose another generation after them which knew not the Lord, nor yet the works which he had done for Israel. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and served Balaam. And they forsook the Lord God of their fathers, which brought them out of the land of Egypt, and followed other gods, of the gods of the people that were round about them, and bowed themselves unto them, and provoked the Lord to anger. And they forsook the Lord, and served Baal and Ashtaroth. And the angel of the Lord was hot against, and the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel. And he delivered them into the hands of the spoilers that spoiled them. And he sold them into the hands of their enemies round about, so that they could not any longer stand before their enemies. Whithersoever they went out, the hand of the Lord was against them for evil, as the Lord had said, and as the Lord had sworn unto them, and they were greatly distressed. Nevertheless, the Lord raised up judges, which delivered them out of the hand of those that spoiled them. And yet they would not hearken unto their judges, but they went a-whoring after other gods, and bowed themselves unto them. They turned quickly out of the way which their fathers walked, in obeying the commandment of the Lord, but they did not so. And when the Lord raised them up judges, then the Lord was with the judge, and delivered them out of the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. For it repented the Lord because of their groanings by reason of them that oppressed them and vexed them. And it came to pass, when the judge was dead, that they returned and corrupted themselves more than their fathers in following other gods to serve them and to bow down unto them. They ceased not from their own doings, nor from their stubborn way. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel. And he said, because that this people hath transgressed my covenant, which I commanded their fathers, and have not hearkened unto my voice, I also will not henceforth drive out any from before them of the nations, which Joshua left when he died. And through them I may prove Israel, whether they will keep the way of the Lord to walk therein as their fathers did keep it or not. Therefore the Lord left those nations without driving them out hastily, neither delivered he them into the hand of Joshua. That is pretty much a summary of the rest of the book of Judges. That is the repeated, redundant history of Israel in a capsule. The rest of the book of Judges tells the various stories as to how that came about in chapter 2 that we are told. The children of Israel did evil in the sight of God, to the point that God's anger was hot, to quote the scripture, against them. In his anger, he took his hand of protection off of them as a nation. He brought in the adversary nations, the oppressive nations, and he allowed those oppressive nations to conquer them. Those oppressive nations would live as tyrants over the people of Israel for a period of years and decades. The people would cry out to God in their oppression and in their bondage. They would call out to the Lord. He would be merciful to them. He would send them a deliverer, also called a judge, who would lead the nation against the oppressive regimes, overthrow them, secure their liberty and their national sovereignty. The people would be set at peace. But in that time of peace, they would again go back to wickedness and corruption. God would then become angry with them and send another nation against them. It was not always the same nation. It was different pagan nations. They would be conquered by that nation. They would be subdued and in bondage. They would again cry out in agony and distress. God would hear them, send another deliverer. They would be delivered. There would be peace. Then they would go back into corruption and wickedness. Then another enemy nation would conquer them. And this went on and on and on and on for hundreds of years. That was the redundant history of the children of Israel throughout the period of time known as the Judges. Now, these Romans 13ers, or the Roman 13 fanatics, need to tear the book of Judges out of their Bibles. Because God Himself raised up judge after judge after judge to lead armed rebellion against those oppressive governments that had enslaved God's people. These people who misuse Romans 13 to mean that Christians, because they are Christians, per Romans 13, are never to resist government, should again tear the book of Judges out of their Bibles. Because that's exactly what they did in the book of Judges over and over and over again. And God was the one who sent the judge. God was the one who delivered the enemies to the children of Israel. It was God who ordered the insurrection and the rebellion against these wicked rulers and leaders. So again, the Romans 13 crowd, as it's commonly known today, are as out of touch with Bible reality as any group of people could ever be. And how they can reconcile the book of Judges with their interpretation of Romans 13 is absolutely crazy. But in verse 18, the Bible says that the Lord raised up judges, and the Lord was with the judge. The Lord was with the judge. What does that mean? That means when Ehud assassinated King Eglon, the Lord was with the judge. When Shamgar killed 600 Philistines with an ox goad, the Lord was with the judge. When Heber's wife, Jael, took a hammer and nail and drove it through the skull of King Jabin's general, Sisera, the Lord was with the judge. When Gideon smote the Midianites, the Lord was with the judge. When Jephthah destroyed the Moabites, the Lord was with the judge. When Samson slaughtered the Philistine, the Lord was with the judge. And each time the Lord raised up a judge, He used that judge to lead a successful rebellion against an oppressive government to bring the nation of Israel into a state of independence and peace. This is the Sunday before our Independence Day Sunday. Next Sunday, July the 2nd, we will commemorate and celebrate as a fellowship the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And I'm especially excited about this year's calendar because the Sunday before Independence Day, the 4th of July, is this year, July the 2nd. And it was on that day, July the 2nd, that the Declaration of Independence was actually introduced into the Continental Congress and passed the Congress and was voted by the Congress, debated by the Congress, etc. After the events of July the 2nd, John Adams wrote his wife Abigail and said that he believed that July the 2nd would be forever known as America's Declaration of Independence or Independence Day. He didn't realize that it really wasn't, it didn't come to be that, that 2 days later, whenever John Hancock signed the initial signature on the finished document, that was the day that became regarded as Independence Day. But July the 2nd was the day that the Declaration was introduced into the Congress. It was the day that it was debated in the Congress. It was the day that it was voted in the Congress, and it was the day that it passed the Congress. So next Sunday is really significant to celebrate. And if you have not seen in previous Independence Day observances here at the Fellowship, next Sunday, and again, I'm excited because it's July the 2nd, the actual day the events that we're going to watch took place. We are going to watch the condensed version. It's about 20 minutes in length of an HBO series that was produced several years ago called John Adams. It was basically a video biography of our second president. But it includes the events that took place on July 2nd, 1776, in which the Declaration was approved by vote of the delegates. And we have selected a 20-minute segment of that video, and we are going to show that next Sunday. It is the best, in my opinion, it is the best and most accurate depiction of the events of July 2nd and the passage of the Declaration of Independence that I've ever seen on film. And we will show that. If you haven't seen it, you don't want to miss it. If you have seen it, you want to see it again. So that'll be a part of our service next Sunday. So this is the Sunday before, so I'm leading into our Independence Day weekend by bringing this address to you. When the Lord would raise up a judge, he would use that judge to lead a successful rebellion against an oppressive government, to bring the nation of Israel into a state of independence and peace. There are tens of thousands of pastors across America today that are teaching their people that our founding fathers violated Scripture when they rebelled against King George and the British Crown and declared America's independence, and then were willing to fight for that declaration. They actually teach that Romans 13 means that it was a sin for our founding fathers to declare independence and fight for independence from the British Crown. I would venture to say, among evangelical churches, the vast majority of pastors believe that. And for those of you that are watching that go to other churches across the country, I challenge you sometime between now and next Sunday, because not all the pastors will admit that. Many do, but not all. I challenge you to ask your pastor between now and next Sunday, do you believe George Washington and the Founding Fathers sinned against God when they rebelled against King George and the British Crown and fought a war for independence? And if they stutter or say yes, I ask you, why would you stay in such a heretical church? And while you're in that discussion, take the Bible with you, have it open to the book of Judges, open it to the book of Judges, and then ask the pastor that just told you that our founding fathers were wrong to rebel against the British crown in 1775 and 6. Then ask him to please explain the book of Judges to you. Those judges led a revolution for national independence. That's what they did. Without national independence, we will have oppression and servitude. National independence is not just nice. It is essential to the maintenance of liberty. Essential. There is no lasting liberty without national independence. The goal of globalists, and they've always been around, they're not a modern invention. They go back as far as the Tower of Babel. If you haven't watched Jason Charles' video, Christ Alone, do we have copies of that on the table? You need to get that. Jason did an excellent job of showing the history of the globalists throughout the ages and the tactics they use, et cetera, et cetera. Exquisitely done, Jason. If you have not got a copy of that, you need to get that before you go. The goal of globalists has always been to dismantle America's sovereignty and independence. Always has been the goal. One of the organizations that is at the forefront of promoting this, what they call, we didn't make up the word, they did, the New World Order, is the Council on Foreign Relations, CFR. I have repeatedly shown in my columns throughout the years how the CFR dominates the presidencies of both Republican and Democratic administrations, including the current one, as well as the Federal Reserve. I would even go so far as to say that the CFR is a very clear and present danger to the sovereignty and the independence of the United States of America. CFR member and UN spokesman Walt Rostow said a few years ago, quote, "It is, therefore, an American interest to see an end to nationhood," close quote. But that's the way CFR people think. That's the way the United Nations thinks. The American people desperately need to wake up to the fact that the international banking interests that dominate our political and financial entities are working tirelessly to fulfill what Walt Rostow said, to see an end to nationhood. That is their goal. I'm talking about the Rothschilds, the Warburgs of Europe, the houses of J.P. Morgan, Kuhn, Loeb, Schiff, Lehman, and Rockefeller. They are the ones who have formed and funded not only the Federal Reserve, but also the globalist agenda at large, and continue to work toward the elimination of nationhood. Rear Admiral Chester Ward, who was the Judge Advocate General of the Navy from 1956 to 1960, and was a former member of the CFR who soon pulled out after realizing what they were all about, warned the American people about the dangers of this and similar organizations, such as the Trilateral Commission and the Bilderbergs. He said, quote, "The most powerful clique in these elitist groups have one objective in common. They want to bring about the surrender of the sovereignty of the national independence of the United States. A second clique of international members in the CFR comprises the Wall Street international bankers and their key agents. Primarily, they want the world banking monopoly from whatever power ends up in control of globalist government," close quote. Admiral Ward also said, "The main purpose of the CFR is promoting the disarmament of U.S. sovereignty and national independence and submergence into an all-powerful one-world government," close quote. Rear Admiral Chester Ward, former Judge Advocate General of the Navy. The CFR has a sister organization, as I just mentioned, called the Trilateral Commission. This group was co-founded by the Marxist Zbigniew Brzezinski and David Rockefeller. Like other globalists in the CFR, Brzezinski calls for a piecemeal, quote, "movement toward a larger community of the developed nations through a variety of indirect ties and already developing limitations on national sovereignty," close quote. By the way, Brzezinski, of course, just died a few weeks ago. I think he was 89 or something like that, close to 90. Brzezinski's daughter, Mika, is co-host and lover, and I heard maybe the wife now, of MSNBC's Joe Scarborough. So whenever you hear Joe and Mika talk about their globalist ideologies, you will know where they got that. That's Zbigniew's daughter. Brzezinski was also a major proponent, along with the CFR member Robert Pastor, of the North American Union, whose construction began during the second term of President George W. Bush, and would have been the law of the land by now. They were actually in the process of building the North American Community Corridor that was designed to connect Mexico with Canada with an east-west corridor all connecting in Kansas City, Missouri. But thankfully, to the state legislators in Texas and the state legislators in Oklahoma who adamantly refused to allow the federal government and the North American community to build that highway connecting from Mexico to Canada. And so we owe a huge thanks to the legislators in Oklahoma and Texas. Without them, it would have been a done deal, and that thing would have already been taking place many years ago. Now, here is a sample list of the notable dignitaries in and out of government who hold or held membership in the CFR or Trilateral Commission, sometimes both. This particular list does not even include the Bilderbergs, and it does not include the Zionists. Here is just a sample list from the past. Every one of these names was either a member, is or was a member of the CFR or trilateral commission, or both. George Herbert Walker Bush, Bill Clinton, Sandra Day O'Connor, Dick Cheney, Les Aspin, Colin Powell, Robert Gates, Brent Scowcroft, Jesse Jackson Sr., Mario Cuomo, Dan Rather, Tom Brokaw, David Brinkley, John Chancellor, Marvin Kolb, Diane Sawyer, Barbara Walters, Cyrus Vance, Paul Volcker, Henry Kissinger, George Shultz, Alan Greenspan, Madeleine Albright, Roger Altman, Bruce Babbitt, Howard Baker, Samuel Berger, Dianne Feinstein, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Chuck Hagel, Gary Hart, John McCain, George Mitchell, Bill Moyers, Jay Rockefeller, Donna Shalala, Strobe Talbot, Fred Thompson, Robert Zoellick, Richard Nixon, Hubert Humphrey, George McGovern, Gerald Ford, Jimmy Carter, John Anderson, Walter Mondale, Michael Dukakis, Al Gore, John Kerry, Democrats and Republicans, all CFR. That's why, no matter who we elect as president, nothing changes in this country of significance. Because the globalists are still in charge of the government. You don't think so? Oh, it's different now with Donald Trump. He's an outsider. He campaigned against the globalists. Here is the list of CFR members and Bilderberg attendees in the Donald Trump administration currently so far. By the way, the number already eclipses the number of CFR appointed by Barack Obama. Did you hear me, ladies and gentlemen? Donald Trump has already appointed more CFR Bilderberg people to his government than Barack Obama did in the entire 8 years Obama was president. And Trump has been there 5 months. Here's the list. Elaine Chao, Jay Clayton, Gary Cohn, Jamie Dimon, Jim Donovan, Larry Fink, Judge Neil Gorsuch, Vice Admiral Robert Harward, Kevin Hassett, Robert Woody Johnson, Robert Lighthizer, General James Mattis, K.T. McFarland, Linda McMahon, General Herbert McMaster, Jim McNerney, Steve Mnuchin, Indra Nooyi, Rick Perry, Dinah Powell, Jeannie Rometty, Wilbur Ross, Stephen Schwartzman, Patrick Shanahan, Rex Tillerson, Jack Welch, and Heather Ann Wilson. Quite a list. CFR, Bilderbergers, globalists, in the highest levels of government appointed by the so-called outsider Donald Trump. We must rid ourselves of this propensity to support those who classify themselves as conservatives, and we must stop blindly supporting the GOP because it is a conservative party. If they do not understand and oppose the New World Order, they do not deserve our support or our vote. And if they do not understand and oppose the Zionist agenda, then they are in league with the New World Order and do not deserve our support or our vote. Ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand, the Zionists are the heart, soul, brains, and money of the New World Order. You cannot oppose the New World Order on one hand while supporting the Zionist movement on the other hand. Cannot. If you support the Zionist agenda, you are supporting the New World Order, no matter what your verbiage might say. Furthermore, and this is where many are going to bristle. So bristle all you want. Muslims are not America's principal problem. They are not. They are not. A couple years ago, I brought a series of three messages on what I call the Muslim problem. Since I delivered those messages, and at the time, those messages helped to produce a glorious bow movement here at Liberty Fellowship. The problem has only exacerbated itself manyfold. Some of you are only going to remember that one statement. I'm going to preach over an hour, and that's the only thing you're going to remember 15 minutes from now. It's to the point that I think I need to re-preach those three messages. Because since the election of Donald Trump, this problem has intensified dramatically. Yes. Everywhere you turn, every talk show, conservative talk show, just about, railing, fear-mongering about the Muslims. Right. The Muslims this, the Muslims that, the Muslims this, the Muslims that. Yeah. It's nonstop. It's ubiquitous. Internet, conservative internet sites, same thing. Muslims, 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 Muslims. That's all you hear. Fox News, Muslims, 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 Muslims. It is an ongoing, incessant, never-ending barrage of propaganda that our chief enemy, our main problem, the real issue that we must deal with and we've got to focus on is the Muslims. And it is a New World Order distraction. Yeah. It's a distraction. Who has troops invading countries? Who has missiles raining down on sovereign nations? America went into shock and righteous indignation, and rightfully so, when Pearl Harbor was attacked and when the attacks occurred on 9/11, 2001. Ladies and gentlemen, the U.S. government is killing at least that many people that were killed at Pearl Harbor and in New York City on those two dates, at least every month, if not quicker in Arab countries around the world. Who is, what country is it that is shooting other countries' aircraft out of the sky as they fly over their own territory? What country has killed tens and tens of thousands of innocent men, women, and children with bombs and drones and jets and Navy aircraft and Navy missiles and Navy ships? What nation is it that is right now occupying southern Syria? I said occupying southern Syria. The United States of America. Despite what you hear from the propaganda media, including the conservative media, ISIS is all but destroyed in Syria. When Mr. Trump was campaigning for president, he criticized Hillary Clinton's desires and plans to attack Syria in the name of fighting ISIS. You remember that? In the presidential debates, he mocked her for that position, said it was a stupid position. He said, and he said the truth when he spoke this. He said, Russia and Syria are doing a superb job of defeating ISIS. We should just stand aside and let them finish the job. That's what he said on the campaign trail. But since he's been in office, what has he done? Dropped missiles in Syria, sent troops in Syria, shot Syrian aircraft out of the sky. And now, with the withdrawal, and I bet Alex Jones hadn't told you this, with the withdrawal of ISIS from southern Syria, thanks to Russia and the government forces of Syria, the U.S. forces have taken over the positions where ISIS were, and now the United States is an occupation force in southern Syria. Why is that? Because this is another thing that you won't hear from the media, either the right or the left. It was the United States CIA and our covert military ops that were supporting ISIS over the last several years. When we say the Americas attacked the anti-government forces in Syria, who are they talking about? ISIS. We're letting ISIS do their thing. When we attack the government troops in Syria, we are helping ISIS. I think I may have misspoken that first part. We're attacking the government troops. When we attack the government troops, they're the ones that are attacking ISIS. We're helping ISIS. But Russia is determined to not lose Syria and is determined to destroy ISIS. And despite all of the best efforts of the United States, Great Britain, and others, Saudi Arabia, ISIS is almost non-existent now in Syria. So our forces are there to take their place. How would we react if any other nation, Syria, Russia, China, Korea, name it, if any other nation decided to occupy southern Texas? What would be our reaction? You bet. And that's exactly what they're doing. But we're the big bully of the world. We have the greatest power. What are they going to do? Plus, they're supported by Saudi Arabia and Israel. Our biggest problem is not Muslims. Not every terrorist who shouts out Allah Akbar is a real Muslim. Many of them are plants from Israel and Saudi Arabia, the Mossad. They've been doing this for years. They're expert at pretending they are what they aren't, inciting war and hatred against a group of people. And by the way, when they talk about Muslims, let's be very clear. There's only one brand of Muslims they're talking about. This is nothing they don't mention. The Sunni Muslims and the Shia Muslims have been at war for centuries. The United States has taken a deliberate, volitional, willful decision to side with Sunni Muslims. The greatest Sunni Muslim empire is the empire of King Salman of Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is the one nation of the world that practices true Sharia law. Sharia law is the law of the land in Saudi Arabia. Not even Iran is run by Sharia law. The Sunni government of Saudi Arabia has run that country with the arm of Sharia law ever since its inception. At least its modern inception. We hear all this talk from these Christians and conservatives about Sharia law this and Sharia law that. And Trump's up there talking about Muslims, 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 Muslims. And all these people talk about Muslims, Muslims, Muslims. And at the same time, the taxpayers of the United States, courtesy of Donald Trump and the U.S. Senate, thank you, Senator Rand Paul, and comrades, for standing against that $500 million, really $11.5 billion military gift to the Saudi Arabians. Thank you very much, Senator Paul, for your stand against it. Sharia law, Muslim, 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 and what are we doing? We are supporting the largest Sharia law country in the world, Saudi Arabia, with military protection. We are cooperating with Great Britain and the Saudis to blockade the little country, the little Muslim country of Yemen. Saudi Arabia is committing genocide in Yemen, and the United States is helping them do it. Tens of thousands of innocent men, women, and children have been killed and are being killed as we speak through the bombing efforts, the military excursions of Saudi Arabia into Yemen, and the blockade out in the water with the United States Navy and the British Navy. We have essentially cut Yemen off from the world, and we are letting innocent men, women, and children starve to death or be blown to pieces. Muslims fighting Muslims. We have allied ourselves with Sharia law, Saudi Arabia. We have allied ourselves with the Sunni Muslims of the Middle East. When they talk about the Muslim problem, they're talking about a certain brand of Muslim, and that's the Shia Muslims, which are mostly in Syria and Iran. They used to be in other parts of the Middle East, and they still a little bit, some in Jordan, some in Iraq, etc. So why is it that Sunni Islam is fine, but Shia Islam, we've got to bomb them off the face of the earth? You know what the problem with Donald Trump's immigration order was, and the reasons it's caused so much division in this country and so much heartache in this country? Either he didn't realize what he was doing when he did it, or he did realize what he was doing and he did it intentionally. You can take your own tack on that. Instead of getting up and identifying a certain religion as far as being restricted from immigrating to this country, all he had to do was simply do two things. As president, I will insist that the immigration laws that are already in place be enforced. Simple. Immigration laws do not prefer one religion or another, or one ethnicity over another. It is just the law. Here it is. This is the process. You got to go through the front door. You got to knock. You got to meet the criteria. You got to go through the red tape. You do it the right way, and we don't care if you're white, black, or Indian, or Hispanic. We don't care what your religion is. If you do it the right way, we invite you in. If you try to do it the wrong way, we will keep you out. That's all you got to say. But no, we had to make it a Muslim issue. It's not a Muslim issue. And then the other thing you could do is just say simply this. The federal government will no longer give financial benefit and incentive for any illegal alien who finds their way here to stay. And yes, go after the sanctuary cities or the sanctuary states or whatever they call themselves and say it's very simple. You will not receive another dime of federal tax dollar if you are going to violate the immigration policies of the United States of America. It's very simple. But no, we had to divide the whole country over a religious issue. But just the Shias. So ask yourself, come on, you're thinkers. Why do we ally ourselves with the Sunni Muslims and we make the Shia Muslims public enemy number one? Why is that? The Shia Muslims refuse to be part of the petrodollar. They refuse to join the Federal Reserve Bank. So when we talk about fighting terrorism by fighting the Muslims, no, we're not fighting terrorism. And it's not about Muslims. It's about a geographic entity of millions of people who have put their thumb in the eye of the globalists by refusing to go along with the Federal Reserve Bank and the petrodollar, and for that they are being punished, they are being tortured, they are being destroyed, and the United States is at the tip of the spear in punishing the Shia Muslim nations because we have become an army for the New World Order. That's the real problem. Our troops are not fighting for the United States. They're fighting for the New World Order. They're fighting for the petrodollar. They're fighting for Goldman Sachs. They're fighting for the Rockefellers. They're fighting for the Warburgs. They are fighting for the Federal Reserve. And I know that's hard to accept. And patriotic Americans don't want to hear that, and they don't want to think that about their brothers and their fathers and their uncles and their loved ones who are in uniform. But that is the reality of where we are. One of the principal problems is not Muslims. One of our principal problems is the people who believe that Muslims are a principal problem. That's a problem. Come on, what would you do? What would you do? What would we do if was being done to us what we are doing to them? Would you call yourself a terrorist? Or would you call yourself a freedom fighter? Yes. Yes. Here's our real problems. Principal problem number one. Our principal problem is God. God. Look at verses 14 and 15 in our text. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he delivered them into the hands of spoilers that spoiled them. And he sold them into the hands of their enemies round about, so they could no longer stand before their enemies. Whithersoever they went, the hand of the Lord was against them for evil, as the Lord had said, and as the Lord had sworn unto them that were greatly distressed. You know why Israel had their problems with all these enemy nations? The problem was God was angry with them. God is angry with America. He's angry with America. We sing that song, God Bless America, but why? Why should God bless America? What we ought to be saying is, God help America to be blessable. God is angry with our country, just like he was with Israel in the Old Testament. Our problem is God. Now, I don't care who you elect, and I don't care how big your army is, and I don't care how many bombs you drop, and I don't care how many radio talk show hosts get up and blather and blather and blather about our enemies being Muslims or this or that. No, our problem is God Almighty. He is angry with the wickedness and the corruption of this country, including in the church. He's angry with us. So a judge would raise up and he'd give the victory over one enemy, and then you know what? God would get angry again, and there would be a brand new. You know what? There's never a loss for enemies. If God is angry with you, our problem is God. He's very angry with us. And we're reaping the consequences of his indignation. Our next principal problem is the men in the pulpits of America who won't speak for God. They just won't. They're intimidated by the 501c3 nonprofit status, or they're intimidated by their own congregations. They're afraid of offending somebody. They're afraid of losing contributors. They're afraid of donors walking out. They're afraid of losing offerings. They're afraid of empty seats. And so they tiptoe in the pulpit. And they won't come out and preach the hard truth. They're politically correct. The best politicians in the world are not in the halls of Congress. They're in the pulpits of America's churches. And as long as the pastors of America refuse to speak out and call a spade, no matter whether it's a Republican or Democrat, whatever the political party might be, notwithstanding, let them stand up in the pulpit and preach the truth as the truth applies to the situation, and let the chips fall where they may. And until they do that, America has a serious problem. Pulpits of America are a principal problem. Principal problem. How long must we talk about this? How long must we try and bring this to the attention of the people? But the third part of it, the third problem is that the so-called Christians in the pews who support these men in the pulpits who won't speak out. They love to have their ears tickled. They love the fluff. They love the entertainment. They love the smoke and mirrors. They love to be lied to. They love to not have the truth told to them. They don't want to hear the truth about Donald Trump. Or, if they were Democrats, they didn't want to hear the truth about Barack Obama. They don't want to hear the truth about our Republican senator. What's his name? Steve Daines, thank you. Who voted to give $500 million plus dollars of military aid to the terrorist state of Saudi Arabia. Thank you, Mr. John Tester, the Democrat, for voting against giving that aid to Saudi Arabia. Thank you, sir. Now, I have plenty of criticism for Mr. Tester on other issues. On this issue, he got it right, and on this issue, Daines got it wrong. Republican and Democrat doesn't matter. Right matters. Yeah. Truth matters. Constitutional government matters. Yeah. You Christians out there that complain and complain and complain about, my pastor won't preach on the issue. My pastor won't take a stand. My pastor won't call a spade a spade. My pastor skirts around the issues all the time. Why are you still there? Your support, your tithes and offerings, your attendance gives that compromising pastor the courage to continue a compromising ministry. If he would see 10%, 20%, 30%, 40% of his congregation walking out because he wasn't speaking the truth, he might think about that thing. But instead, what's his motivation? The crowds are up, offerings are up, buildings are going up, insurance is going up. I don't mean cost, I mean enacting. Staff, benefits, all increasing. And then one or two people say, you know what, I wish our pastor would speak out on it. God bless you. But come to a church like this, where a pastor like Chuck Baldwin gets up and preaches it straight down the line and doesn't spare either side of the political aisle, sticks to the truth, sticks to the Bible, sticks to the Constitution of the United States, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, and people get mad and leave and go to the fluff church, go to the entertainment church, go to the fuzzy feel-good church. Right? Am I right or wrong? Who has the biggest congregations in anybody's town? The feel-good, fuzzy, fluff churches. Who has the smallest congregations? The churches where the pastors are preaching the truth, not compromising, straight out of the Bible. Don't blame anybody but yourselves for the preachers that we have in this country. The next principal problem is the people that refuse to acknowledge and deal with the neocon Zionist New World Order globalists. It's the most maddening thing. You know, the globalists are like the devil. Everybody knows he exists, but nobody wants to talk about him. Everybody knows these people are there, but nobody wants to talk about them. And they certainly don't want to talk about the Zionist connection. Always remember that the primary goal of globalists is perpetual war. That's the primary goal. Perpetual war. Conflict. Division. I wrote this in my column this past week. The Trump White House has quickly taken us to the precipice of World War III. While claiming to fight terrorism, Trump is sending over 500 million, the actual figure is in the billions, of military aid to one of the biggest sponsors of terrorism in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia. He's helping the House of Saud commit genocide against the people of Yemen. He's launching missiles into Syria. He is bombing Syrian troops. These are the troops that are truly fighting ISIS. He's shooting down Syrian jets. He has the U.S. military building an occupation force in southern Syria. He has U.S. and NATO troops playing war games on Russia's borders. What if China and Russia were playing war games just below the Texas border in Mexico? What would we do? He is all but promising to go to war with one of Russia's closest allies, Iran. And for what reason? Donald Trump is doing just about everything a U.S. president can do to ignite war with Russia. I don't know what the guy has to do next. In my opinion, Vladimir Putin is acting like a statesman, cool as a cucumber, refusing to bite the bait, refusing to be drawn in. He's building coalitions. He's acting calmly and cautiously. Most men in his position would have launched their ICBMs months ago. Do we really want nuclear war with Russia? Can anybody imagine what nuclear war would be like the next day? Millions and probably billions of people killed. Nuclear winter for how many years? Infection, disease, starvation. Agriculture, for the most part, would be non-existent. It would hardly be a safe place. Only the remote places would be safe. And even those would be difficult. Big cities would be scorched from the earth. And the people in Washington, D.C. are acting like this is a game. Like somehow or another, we're going to be immune. We're not going to pay the price. Mr. Trump claims to be opposed to the globalists. He ran on a campaign of anti-globalism. Reality check. He has appointed more globalists to his administration than Barack Obama. He is aggressively carrying out the globalists' primary objective of perpetual war. He has increased, not decreased, the perpetual war doctrine put in place by G.W. Bush. He's increased that war doctrine. Somehow or another, liberty-loving people, people that say they believe the Constitution, people that say they love God, people that say they love truth, at some point or another, they are going to have to become aware of the globalists who are running the show in Washington, D.C., and in London, England, and in Tel Aviv, Israel, and in Saudi Arabia. Our problem is we, these countries, are nothing but pawns on a chessboard being manipulated by the globalist elite who are creating war and conflict for their own purposes. The globalists have already made their plans to survive a nuclear war. The globalists already have their underground facilities fully stocked with food and water and medicine enough to last for several years. They already have everything they need to survive such a war. And believe me, because they are the ones pulling the strings, if it starts, they will be the ones that shoot the starting gun, and they will be the ones that will already have found their place in their holes to survive. And whenever the next morning sun rises and the globe is decimated by nuclear weaponry, it will be the globalists who will come up out of their holes, ready for their new world order to be put into place permanently. You and I won't be so fortunate. Try to get Sean Hannity to even acknowledge there is any such thing as a new world order, that there is any such thing as a Zionist globalist agenda. In our text in Judges 2, God's judges delivered Israel from those enemies that had conquered them. America has not been conquered yet by any foreign nation. If we go into nuclear war, all bets are off. But while we have not been conquered by a foreign power, that is a foreign military power, America has been conquered internally. If you have not got it, and this is not self-promoting, you need this truth. Hell's greatest hoax is on America. We've already been conquered internally. And I give you 9 enemies that have conquered the heart and soul of America on this DVD. We've already been conquered internally. The IRS has conquered our churches. Fear has conquered our pastors. Greed and the lust for power have conquered our political leaders. Humanistic education has conquered our children's minds. Movies, television, and entertainment have conquered our teenagers. Fox News has conquered our senior citizens. Zionism has conquered most of Western Christendom. We're already an enslaved people, inwardly. We desperately need for God to raise up judges in America. We need young people who can see through the entertainment propaganda and the Hollywood propaganda and stand for principle and truth among their peers, educate their peers, teach their peers, help them to understand truth. We need pastors to stand in their pulpits Sunday after Sunday and educate them from the Word of God, the principles of liberty that God has given us in His Word. We need attorneys in the courtrooms to stand for the Constitution and, instead of being patsies for the power establishment, actually stand in the courtrooms of law for the Constitution of the United States. We need physicians who will defy this trend to bring the medical community under the control of the federal government. I've already taken too much time, but this new Trump Care bill that is making its way through the Congress is worse than Obamacare. Worse than Obamacare. For the first time in American history, if this thing passes, and right now it looks like it doesn't, it's not going to. Again, thank you, Rand Paul and a few others. It would It would completely remove the patient-doctor or patient-hospital relationship, and it would go directly from a government insurance company relationship. The hospitals and the doctors and the medical care and the medical community would answer to a government bureaucrat for their health care provisions. Fact. The bill was written by the insurance company. Do you really want a government bureaucrat deciding your health care? And your doctor and your hospital physician and staff would not be able to make an independent decision for your health, but rather they would have to go hand in hand to the federal bureaucrat to determine directly what your health care would be? That's what would happen if the Republicans pass this health care bill. Donald Trump's all for it. House Leader Ryan is for it. Senate Majority Leader is for it. And there's a few, just a few handful of constitutionalist senators. Rand Paul's been leading the charge on this. I've said it 3 or 4 times, but I just cannot thank Rand enough. Rand has stood like a champion for in defense of constitutional liberty for the American. I sure hope the people of America, and especially the people of Kentucky, appreciate that senator. Would to God the great state of Montana had a senator like Rand Paul. We need businessmen that understand honesty in business, whose bottom line is not the dollar, but is doing what's right. Blue-collar workers that have the fortitude of their convictions to stand for the principles of right among their peers. Educators who will defy this government foisted public education system on the schools, requiring them to teach things that are antithetical to the principles of liberty. No local school needs any advice from a Washington bureaucrat as to how they teach the children of their communities. Musicians, artists who are not bowing down before the gods of money in Hollywood and New York City. People with talent, people with ability to communicate, who are willing to communicate truth, even if it costs them something in the process. The time is past for people in America, regardless of vocation or calling, to think that they can just quietly, sheepishly go through their life and not take a stand and not speak out on what is right in this country and expect that liberty is going to survive. We speak as a people. We stand as a people, or we will die as a people. And the Lord raised them up judges, and the Lord was with the judge and delivered them out of the hand of their enemies. Oh, that God would raise us up judges today. Let's stand for prayer.